Our scripture reading today will be Acts 6, verses 1 through 7. Acts 6, verses 1 through 7. I'll be reading from the New International Version. In those days, when the number of disciples were increasing, the Grecian Jews among them complained against the Hebraic Jews because their widows were being overlooked in the daily distribution of food. So the 12 gathered all the disciples together and said, It would not be right for us to neglect the ministry of the Word of God in order to wait on tables. Brothers, choose 7 men from among you who are known to be full of the Spirit and wisdom. We will turn this responsibility over to them and will give our attention to prayer and the ministry of the Word. This proposal pleased the whole group. They chose Stephen, a man full of faith and of the Holy Spirit, also Philip, Prochorus, Nicanor, Timon, Parmenas, and Nicholas from Antioch, a convert to Judaism. They presented these men to the apostles, who prayed and laid their hands on them. So the word of God spread, the numbers of the disciples in Jerusalem increased rapidly, and a large number of priests became obedient to the faith.
When friends fight, I don't know if you've seen kind of one of the hot topics in the news this week has been the lady, I think, from actually Tennessee, who adopted a child from Russia. Have you seen this in the news? And it's kind of really been, it's really caused an international debate. But apparently this lady wanted to adopt a child, and so she had adopted a child from Russia. This child was a little bit older. He didn't adopt, apparently, him as a baby. And when they got the boy here, they changed his name and adopted him, made him a part of the family. Problems began to arise, and as they described it, he became very, very difficult. Got to the point of threatening members of the family and threatening to burn down their home and so forth. And so the family kind of thought they couldn't take it anymore, and so they stuck him on an airplane. With a little note, basically, we tried the best we could to love him and take care of him. It didn't work, and so they put him on a plane and sent him back to Russia. And it has really caused, it's been a major incident, not only in the U.S. and kind of caused uproar in a lot of families here, but also in the Soviet Union, because they are now saying they're going to shut down all adoptions from the United States because of it. I don't know what will come of it, and I don't know all the details. So my goal this morning is not to offer commentary. There are just a lot of things and too many things I don't know about what's going on. But I do think I can safely say this is not how it's supposed to be. That this shouldn't happen and escalate to this point in families. That it shouldn't be this way. But unfortunately, as we think about when friends fight this morning, unfortunately, sometimes it's like that. Sometimes things become so toxic in families that families do things they shouldn't do to each other. And it leads to the breaking up of those families. Sometimes it happens in friendships. It even happens in congregations of God's people. As we think today about Acts chapter 6, verses 1 through 7, when friends fight, we need to realize that while it shouldn't be that way, the fact is there will be times when friends fight. In other words, the key to see in this passage is that friends will fight. The question is, what are we going to do about it? Are we going to let it become so toxic that we kick one member of the family out? Or we break up a friendship? Or we bust up a congregation? Or are we going to find a way to fix it? I want us to think about two things this morning. I want us to talk about why friends fight and how friends fix it. In other words, I want us just to look at a few of the reasons these friends had a disagreement. And then I want us to look at some steps they took to fix it. Now, I'm not trying to say these are the only reasons friends disagree. I'm not trying to say these are the only steps people can take to fix problems. But I do think we may find some reasons here that are like some of our reasons. And I do believe that some of the things that they did to work out their difficulties can work in our friendships, in our families, and our congregations if we'll but put them into practice. So let's start off. Why do friends fight? Why do we have a disagreement here among Christians in the early church? The first reason, I would think, is the devil's at work, and we need to realize that. Remember that as you begin chapter 6, the church is growing and flourishing. People are coming in droves. It seems every time you turn around in the book of Acts, more people are being baptized into Christ for the forgiveness of their sins. And the church is growing, and it's just great things are happening in the church. And we've seen that in chapter after chapter as we've walked through the book of Acts. But we also need to realize that Satan will never be content with the growth and success of God's people. It is his mission from the earliest of creation, the earliest days of creation, to thwart all that is good and is of God in the world. We can think back to Genesis chapter 3, when in the garden he sought to thwart the goodness and the unity and the fellowship that existed in the garden. And he is still trying to do that. And you've had a series of attacks by Satan on the early church. Even as the church has grown and great things are happening, and you throughout Acts in these early days, you have references to the fact that they were of one mind, one purpose, one spirit, etc. Satan is over and over attacking that and trying to break it down. He does it from the outside, he does it from the inside. For example, he's going to have an external attack in which he's going to have Peter and John thrown into a dungeon. Then he's going to have an internal attack. Remember in chapter 5 when you had the deception by Ananias and Sapphira who lied and misused the giving to bring glory to themselves. Then you have an external attack again. And this time he doesn't just throw Peter and John in prison, but he throws all the apostles in prison. And we looked at that in Acts chapter 5. Now, in chapter 6, we're seeing that having had an external attack and thrown some more into a dungeon, we see another internal attack. And this time, he's not going to do it with deception by Christians on the inside, but disagreement by Christians on the inside. My point is, Satan wants to destroy your friendships, especially friendships in the Lord. Satan wants to destroy our families. And Satan wants to destroy our congregations. And so when we are tempted to become angry with each other, I think sometimes it can be helpful to see who's behind it. When we're tempted to break off a friendship or break a family relationship or divide ourselves, we need to stop and step back and say, hey, it's really not this person. Yes, they're allowing themselves to be an instrument. Yes, maybe I am allowing myself to be an instrument. But ultimately behind it all is the work of Satan. And sometimes it seems when arguments begin to arise, if we realize that's what Satan wants, that's what Satan's after, and that's what Satan's trying to do, sometimes realizing that gives me the motivation to not let it happen. Because then it goes beyond just a disagreement I've got with another person, but it becomes a cosmic battle with the forces of evil, and I do not want the devil to win in my life. And so I think the first thing we need to realize that I believe Satan is at work in this disagreement. I think the second thing that we need to realize is that friends fight because people are different. As you look at this particular passage, the disagreement is between two groups of Christians. The Hellenistic Jews, the Christians who came, who were Jews, because remember the church started in the Jewish context, and so these are all folks who came out of a Jewish background and came into Christianity. And so you've got the Hellenistic Jews and the Hebraic Jews. And the Hellenistic Jews are just the Jews that were heavily or more heavily influenced by the Greek culture. And I want to recognize, as I speak here, I'm speaking in generalizations. Okay? Not all of these things may be true of all in these categories, but there are some general things that we think we know about what's going on in these two groups. But as Alexander the Great conquered the world of his day, he sought to permeate that world he controlled with the Greek culture. And different societies were influenced by that Greek culture to varying levels. And so the Hellenistic or Greek-speaking Jews were the Jews who were a little more heavily influenced by the Greek culture. They may have spoken Greek in their home as the primary language. Now, many in the first century both spoke Aramaic or Hebrew and Greek. But the question was, what was their primary language? Many folks were knew more languages than many of us today. Many of us may only know one language. That was not as common in the first century. Most everybody could at least understand at least a couple of different languages. But those who were influenced by the Greek culture were more apt to adopt Greek practices. They were more apt to speak Greek in their homes. And most think in this setting, in the early church, they were more apt to be people from out of town. They were more apt to be folks who weren't from around Jerusalem, but came in from elsewhere, at least in this setting, in this context. And apparently it seems that those who were Jews influenced by the Greek culture sometimes thought themselves more intelligent, more refined, that they were stronger in the area of culture and knowledge and learning because they had exposed themselves to the knowledge and learning of the Greek culture. In contrast, you had the Hebraic Jews who felt like that allowing the Greek culture to influence them was unpatriotic and that it was not being true to God and that we shouldn't let the culture influence us, was their perception. And so they spoke Aramaic in the home, which is sister language to the Hebrew language. And so that was what you heard in their household. They were less likely to adopt Greek things and things from that particular culture. And in this setting, most think they were more apt to be local people. They were more apt to be people in and around Jerusalem. And so as you look at them, they were kind of arrogant about something else. The Greek-speaking Jews put pride in their intelligence and the fact that they knew more about culture. They were more cultured. The Hebrew-speaking Jews took pride in the fact that they were more faithful. They didn't give in to an outside culture. They're more patriotic. They're more faithful to being a Hebrew and to being a Jew. In other words, they're more Jew than the others were. And they felt they were more faithful to God because they didn't cave in to the culture. So each of them took pride in different things and thought they were better than the other for different reasons. And we think that they even had separate synagogues in which they worshiped before becoming Christians in the city of Jerusalem. My point is, as we look at just these few examples, there were a lot of differences. And as you look at this story, really what's amazing is not that they disagreed. What's amazing is that, for the most part, they got along. That's the amazing thing about this chapter. That most think you're, at this point, some 3 to 8 years removed from when the church began on the day of Pentecost. And for the most part, up to this point, there had been basic unity. And after this, for the most part, there would be unity. That's really what's amazing. But it shouldn't surprise us that they had a disagreement. Because they're different. They're the same in some ways, but they had differences. People are different. There are many differences in many different areas in this auditorium. So if in the next 10, 15, 20 years, every once in a while there's a disagreement amongst us, we shouldn't get torn all to pieces and say, man, I can't believe those friends or that family fought. Man, people are different. And when people are different, they're going to look at things a little differently. And at times there are going to be disagreements. And we shouldn't freak out as if it's unusual when people who are different every once in a while have a disagreement about it. So I think they fought, first of all, because of the work of Satan. Second of all, because they're different. I think the third reason that they may have fought is because people got feelings hurt. It says the Greek-speaking Jews complained. It's the same word that you used for the murmuring of the Israelites in the Old Testament against Moses when they said, you know, we don't have anything to eat, we don't have water, etc. But it says they complained because their widows were being left out. Now you're going to find consistently in the New Testament there's an emphasis on taking care of the needy, especially the fatherless and the widows. You might compare James chapter 1, verse 27. And so the early church sought to practice that and to take care of the widows who didn't have families to take care of them. But in the process of feeding and taking care of the widows on a daily basis, the Greek-speaking widows were being left out. Now some say this is all imagined. They weren't really left out, they just imagined it was left out. But that's not the way Acts 6 presents it. It doesn't present this as if that's what they said, or that's what they thought, or that's what they imagined. The text just presents it as if, yes, they were left out. And when the apostles speak, they don't try to argue and say, no, well, actually, they really weren't left out. Everything is presented as if, yes, maybe they were. We don't know why. We don't know intentional, unintentional. My belief is, based on the love and unity that's been exhibited to this point, I doubt it's intentional, but I don't know. The text doesn't get into that, which I think is significant. Point is, these folks are hurt. They love their families. They love their neighbors and their friends. And when they feel like they've been hurt or been slighted, then emotion gets involved. And when people's feelings get hurt and their emotions get involved, they're often less rational. We are less rational. We're less able to see somebody else's perspective. When my feelings get hurt, my first reaction is, how could somebody do this to me? My first reaction is not, I wonder if somebody hurt them. I wonder if there's something going on in their lives that caused them to act this way. When my feelings are hurt, my first impulse is usually not to think, what's going on in their world and are they okay? My first impulse is, I hurt and why did you do it? And so emotions got involved in this. I think another reason friends sometimes fight is that we're worn out and tired. It's interesting to me to look at what the apostles say when they address the problem. You may remember, if you go back to chapter 4, when it was talking about the unity in the church and how they took care of each other, you may remember the text said that there were some people who were selling land and possessions, and they were taking the money and they were laying it at the apostles' feet. Now, isn't it interesting that that good thing that happened in the church would become a place where Satan would give two attacks? The first thing they were doing is they were selling their property and giving to the needy Christians among them. So what does Satan do? Well, then you have an attack on the inside. You have two people who were deceptive in their giving of property. They were lying about how much they sold it for and how much they were giving, and they were doing it to their glory. So he used the selling of the property and deception and lying and self-centeredness in relation to it to potentially disrupt the congregation. That didn't work. So now it seems maybe he's focusing on the fact the money was laid at the apostles' feet. What's interesting is there's a lot we don't know. We don't know exactly how they took care of feeding the needy widows on a daily basis. But I think it's interesting back in chapter 4 that it says when people brought the money to take care of these folks, they laid it at the apostles' feet. They were responsible for the oversight of the money. But it may be that as the number grew and grew and grew, the job became overwhelming. Whatever role they played in it, whether they had direct hands-on leadership, where they were maybe actually taking meals to people's homes, or where they were trying to coordinate different people to do it. It's interesting to me that the apostles said, we can't stop doing what God has called us to do to take care of this. And sometimes, and I don't want to read too much into it, I'm just saying this is a possibility, not something I know for sure. But I do know that sometimes fights and disagreements happen between people when they're tired, frustrated, and overworked. When they're having to do more than they have the time to do, or when they're doing so many different things, they don't feel like they get what they need to be done and what's most important right. I do think that happens a lot in churches. That sometimes we get frustrated with each other and we are more apt to disagree with each other. Many times when we're working hard, we're doing great things for God and there's a great activity going on and everybody's working hard at it, but everybody's worn slap out. And when you're tired and you're overworked, I think, maybe I'll just speak for myself, I get grumpy. No comments, Katie and Hannah. But that happens to us. I don't know if that's what's going on, but I do think that does happen sometimes in friendships. And maybe, just maybe, these are some of the things that are at work in our story. But what I'm really concerned with today is not just why, because there might be many reasons why this happened. And there might be many reasons why we have disagreements as friends and family. But what I'm concerned with is what did they do to fix it? And as I look at what they did, the first thing that I notice is presentation. They talked about it. They didn't ignore it. They didn't push it aside and hope that it would go away, because sometimes that's how we handle problems. They talked about it. Now, I want to say that for this to happen, both sides have to be willing to listen. That's critical. In other words, sometimes people, when there's a disagreement, they want to talk about it, but they're not talking about it to work out the problem. They're not talking about it to hear what you have to say. They're talking about it so they can force you to believe what they believe. So they can hammer their belief down your throat until you give in and submit and say, okay, whatever you say, that's what we'll do. That's not working out a problem. That's domineering. Okay, that's the way the Gentiles lead that Jesus talked about when He was talking to the apostles and said, that's how the Gentile rulers lead. That's not the way you're supposed to lead. If you're going to actually talk about it, work out the problem, both sides have to be able to speak, and both sides have to be willing to listen, and both sides have to be willing to change and be open to the fact that maybe the other side does have some right things to say and think about it. In this story, I know the way it's presented to us, the apostles are doing all the talking. Now we need to remember that they are the authority of God in the situation. But I want us to realize that the other side has already presented its position. Okay, the Greek-speaking folks, they've already presented their position. Now the apostles are presenting their position. Okay, your widows are being left out. We don't deny that. But we also have been given a mission by God. And if we take care of this and don't get our mission done, then it presents a problem for us. So we've each got a problem. So how do we fix those two perspectives? Us needing to do our job, you're needing your widows taken care of. But they presented the problem. They talked about it. The second thing is, I want us to think about the idea of point. It doesn't seem to me they pointed fingers. Okay? And they didn't make excuses. All right? They didn't say, okay, well, it was this person's fault and it was that person's fault. They didn't really get into a discussion of why it happened and whose fault it was. The apostles just said, here's why we can't do it. I want you to understand, it's not that we don't care. It's not that this is not important. It's because we've been given a mandate by Jesus Himself to preach the Word, and so we need to focus on preaching and prayer. But we do think the problem needs to be fixed. And so one of the things that happens when folks come together to work out a problem, the reason it often doesn't get better is because the whole conversation is about blaming each other or making excuses. Instead of saying, okay, it's not about whose fault it is or how we got here, it's about how do we fix it and how do we move on from here. The third thing I notice is they came up then with a plan. They establish a course of action. Because it's not enough just to agree that we're upset and you're hurt and I'm hurt and all this stuff. I need to begin to say, okay, how can we together devise a plan that solves the problem? Now, the apostles originated the plan, but we don't need to think that others didn't have input, because text is going to go on to say that the plan was pleasing to the people. In other words, the folks in Jerusalem liked the plan. And so it was a group agreed upon plan of action to work out the problem. And the plan involved putting somebody in charge of a specific task. The elders of the apostles would do their thing. The group that would take care of the widows would do their thing. And so they had a plan. And that plan involved putting people in specific positions. They clarified everybody's job. They gave people authority and responsibility. They commissioned them for the job and then let them go. Okay, the apostle said, here's our mission. And many times I think we disagree and fight. And I think many times things don't get worked out because we don't know what each other's doing. We don't know who's supposed to do what and why. We don't know. I don't know what my job is. You don't know what your job is. We've never agreed on those things. We've never communicated those things. And then we put people in a position to fix a problem, and we never give them the authority to make any decisions or control any money or to do anything that needs to be done to work it out. They didn't do that. They said, here are the qualifications for the person who's going to fix the job. Here is who is going to pick out the folks who fix the job. We're then going to lay hands on them, which was one of their ways of commissioning somebody for a job, and say, in other words, we send you forth to do this work and we give you the authority to do this work. They were clear about what everybody was going to do afterwards to respond to the problem, and they all agreed upon what the apostles were going to do, what the congregation was going to do, and what the men chosen were going to do. And that's what we have to do. We have to have a plan that we've all agreed on and be clear on what everybody's going to do. The final thing is, everybody needs to pitch in. And so what we find is, after it was decided upon, the apostles went to their work, the people also went to work. They went to work looking among themselves, deciding who were going to be the men to take care of this task. It's interesting that all seven men chosen went by Greek names. At the risk of reading too much into it, it seems that potentially the men chosen were primarily men from the community that was upset because their widows were not being taken care of. That would have been the appropriate community for it to come from, because those are the people who would have best known and understood the needs of those widows and even where they lived. But there comes a point where you've got to put the plan into action, where everybody says, okay, we agree we need to do something, and here's what we need to do. Now let's get to work. Acts chapter 6 makes it clear. Friends will fight. The question is, will friends fix it? I don't know if you noticed, this morning they blew up the old Texas Stadium. Did anybody see that today? Okay, those who might be Dallas fans, maybe you mourn that. Those who aren't Dallas fans thought it was really great and thought wish they'd blow up the new one, but that's a separate story. I'm not saying whose fan you are and who you are not, but it was interesting. There was a little boy who won a contest, and he pushed a button. A little boy, I want to say about 10, but don't hold me to that. He pushed a button, and old Texas football stadium imploded upon itself. Many times in friendships and families and congregations, it's something little that pushes just the right button, that sets in order a chain of events that brings down friendships, that brings down families, brings down congregations of God's people. It's inevitable in life that our buttons are going to get pushed. It's inevitable that at some point along the way we're going to have disagreements. The challenge is to stop the chain of events so that we do not implode or explode. And so my question for us today is, what chain of events do we need to stop? Is there a relationship, a friendship we need to fix? Is there a fight we need to fix right now, today? And most of all, do we need to fix our relationship with God? First of all, am I a friend of God? Have I ever been baptized into Jesus Christ for the forgiveness of sins? Or if I'm a child of God, but I've not been the friend of God I ought to be, is it time now, today, to make some changes? Let's do so and stop the fighting of friends as we stand and as we sing.